Welcome to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is a Saturday morning live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. I'm Tim Murray. Coming up in 15 minutes, we'll head to the land. Cleveland, how are they feeling right now as they get ready for Game 3 today? Can't imagine too many nice words being said about James Harden, but we will talk to my good friend Jonathan Peterlin of 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland in 15 minutes. Zachary Cohen will join us later on this hour. We'll get his best bets for the NBA slate. I just want to point this out. Bottom of the hour, Pat Forty was on Follow the Money yesterday talking about expansion in the college basketball tournament. And we'll play a little bit for you. I've got some thoughts on it from a betting standpoint, from a casual fan standpoint, all those things mixed up. But I just, any opportunity that I can get, you know I will talk some college football. We had a little bit of news this week, and just mark it down. 16 weeks. That's how close we are. 16 weeks. We'll be on this show in 112 days, math, not a strength right now, 112 days talking to you about games, college football. Also this week, we get the NFL schedule. So there's never really a dull time, is there? Because we got playoff basketball, NHL hockey, or Stanley Cup playoff, going on. Jonathan Davis, by the way, will join us in the last hour of the program, help us handicap the games on the ice today. But let's start with Oklahoma City and Los Angeles here, because this is a pretty, I don't want to say fascinating, because that might be a little aggressive. It has not been that fascinating of a series with two 18-point wins by the Oklahoma City Thunder. But from the point spread standpoint, it has been interesting. Right there on the number. And now you get the Lakers at home catching 8.5 against the Oklahoma City Thunder today. We know there will be no Luka Doncic here for the Los Angeles Lakers. I have been kind of impressed by the Lakers, believe it or not, and how they've played. But also, when you just look at this Thunder team and what they are capable of doing just from a depth standpoint, right? And we played you the clip to open the show from Mark Daigneault on SGA and how much attention, as you would imagine, the Lakers are throwing at him. SGA under his player prop in both of these games pretty easily. 18 points in game one, just the first time all season. First time since the last playoffs that he didn't have 20 points in a game. Then he had 22 in game two. But you look at a Chet Holmgren with 22 points. Isaiah Hartenstein, I want to talk to Zachary Cohen about this later on this hour, because I think he has some player props that he's looking at with Hartenstein. He's been effective very early on in these games. He's been getting buckets early. And then you look at Jared McCain coming off the bench hitting four threes against the Lakers. They just keep coming at you in waves. They don't even have Jalen Williams yet. Yes, they have one Jalen Williams, but not the Jalen Williams. And then you look at Los Angeles. Austin Reeves is getting healthier, had his best performance since returning from injury in the Game 2 loss, went for 31 points. LeBron continues to do ridiculous things at his age, going for 23-6-2 in the Game 2 loss. You know, is this the spot? And you heard Thomas Gable mention it. I wrote it down here. They have not been shy on Oklahoma City. That's what he said regarding this game. And it makes sense, right? Bring it back to college football, because any chance I have to bring it back to college football, I will do so. What does the betting public tend to like? And it's not just exclusive to college football. It's the NFL. It's college basketball. When teams go on the road, there is a belief that, hey, that team is maybe a little bit on sale. You look at what this point spread was for games 1 and 2 and what it is now, should it have moved as much? Oklahoma City wins and covers game 1, wins and cover game 2. Didn't really play especially well in game 1, in my opinion. Still got the cover. The Lakers were winning at halftime. Oklahoma still got the cover, 125-107. So it makes sense to hear from Thomas Gable that at the Borgata, the bettors are not shy of laying the chalk with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Is this the spot? And I know it's that typical, you know, down 0-2 situation. And maybe you zag a little bit, right? But looking at betting splits right now over at VSiN.com, 61% of bets on Oklahoma City, 83% of the money. Now, a lot more of those bets are still to come, obviously. The game doesn't tip off until 8:30 Eastern, 5:30 Pacific tonight in Los Angeles. But how should we look at this game from a betting standpoint? Do we anticipate that first half rush? And what is kind of curious to me is that you aren't necessarily paying the typical tax on the first half that you normally have to do, right? You look at Detroit and Cleveland, you're paying a little bit of a tax on the first half, -3 first half for Cleveland, 4.5-point favorite full game. For the Lakers, 8.5-point dog full game, 4.5-point dog first half. And as I mentioned, you think back to game two, you saw a really strong performance, especially in that second quarter. You saw a late three, by the way. We were on air on VSiN Primetime Thursday night, and Rui Hachimura hits a three as time expires in the first quarter, got them the first quarter cover. So they were a 4.5-point first quarter underdog. The Lakers were in Oklahoma City, hit that three, get the cover, and then they win the second quarter, and they're leading at the break. So what do we get from the Lakers out of the gates here? Right, down 0-2, the complaining about the refereeing. Do you see that desperation, typical down 0-2 spot? Also, now, fair or not, I'm going to bring it up. The Thunder right now look like the complete class of the NBA, which is not stunning. But you think back to last year. Game three against Memphis, I believe that was the game they were down 30-plus on the road at Memphis. They win. They come back. They have the historical comeback win, 114-108. That's the game that Ja got hurt. But I bring it up because Memphis got the cover. Game three in the second round against the Denver Nuggets on the road. They lost that game in overtime. Game three in the Western Conference Finals against Minnesota a year ago. Blown out. Lost by 42. Game three against the Pacers in the NBA Finals. Sensing a trend? They lost. So last year, the Oklahoma City Thunder in the postseason, 0-4 ATS in game three. Now, this year, they did cover against the Phoenix Suns in game two. It was a competitive game. They won 121-109. They had a comfortable lead at the half as well. So, look, this Oklahoma City team, yes, they're still missing Jalen Williams, which is massive, and they're still playing this well, which is ridiculous. And by the way, they still have a 1.5% chance to get the number one pick tomorrow. The world is not ready for Oklahoma City. Are we ready for the conversation that the Oklahoma City Thunder have a 3 out of 200 chance to get the number one pick in the NBA draft? They have a 7% chance, by the way, to get a top four pick. They could end up adding an A.J. DeBanta, a Cameron Boozer, a Darius Acuff, a Darren Peterson. World's not ready for that. 7% chance to be a top seven pick or top four pick tomorrow. Do we see what we saw last year from Oklahoma City in these game three spots where they're maybe a little bit lackadaisical, they don't, you know, get ready for the moment? Or is this OKC team just that much better than the Lakers? I think for me, if I were to play this game tonight, and I think I will, I would look Lakers first half. Maybe split the unit first half, full game, 4.5, 8.5. You hear it all the time. It's a broken record. Can't fake desperation. If they're going to get a game, it feels like it's going to be this game here tonight. Cleveland Cavaliers, by the way, flipping to the other series that Tips off at 3 o'clock Eastern this afternoon. We'll dive into this game more with my buddy Jonathan Peterlin coming up in 5 minutes. But how about the role players for Detroit stepping up? Cade Cunningham in that fourth quarter was awesome. What a moment, what a performance he had. But what we've seen from role players in this series, and how about Danis Jenkins, the former St. John's guard? He has been really impressive throughout this postseason and in this series, going over his props. Let's hear from Jenkins as they go to Cleveland up 2-0 against the Cavaliers.
Yeah, man, we just know just last series we was down 3-1. So we're going to keep swinging. You know what I mean? Our back's still against the wall. The world still don't believe. We still trying to prove something to ourselves. You know what I mean? We set out this year with goals, certain goals in our mind, and we're not there yet. Job not finished. We just came out this series and took care of home court like we were supposed to. So now it's just about, like you said, we do got to do a good job of talking to each other and staying hungry and staying humble, but yet still coming out with that fire. You know what I mean? Like our backs is against the wall, because it is.
Jenkins has gone for 16, did that in Game 7 against the Magic, 12 in Game 1, 14 in Game 2. You always wonder with these role players, especially now heading on the road, those three games all at home. Is today the day to fade Danis Jenkins? Over under now 10.5. Is this the peak of the market? What? These are words I am speaking. Are we at the peak of the market on Danis Jenkins in these NBA playoffs? Let's talk more about Cleveland and the Pistons with Jonathan Peterlin. He joins us next.
VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
You know what I didn't realize? I'm chuckling to myself, which is totally normal at 7:15 on a Saturday morning. I'm jotting things down. I've got a pencil. I'm writing on a yellow legal pad. I'm like, we've got three Jonathans on the show today. We've got Jonathan Davis, Jonathan Von Tobel, and our next guest, Jonathan Peterlin, JP from 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland, Afternoon Drive. Make sure you check out his program there. You know, JP, it's easy to take your wax right now at James Harden now that he's your problem, if you will. But what was yesterday like? I'm just curious, on your show in the city regarding James Harden, because this is nothing new. And whether it's fair or not, another postseason failure for him. More turnovers than baskets made for, what, the fourth time this postseason, and a critical turnover late in that game. Just James Harden-wise, where are you guys at? Where were you guys at yesterday, and what do you expect today from the beard?
All right, so people are melting down, but here's what I want you to understand, and I feel like your listeners to understand as well. James Harden was the problem in Game 2. Sure, everyone was the problem in Game 2, though. But James Harden has not been the problem this postseason. And I get in arguments with people on my station about this. I get in arguments with listeners about this. Like in the first series against Toronto, Tim, you can make a legitimate argument he was the best Cavs player. He was better than Donovan Mitchell. 22-6-5. Turnovers were miserable. Yeah, but like 22-6-5 should matter, especially when Donovan's not really doing much, Mobley's doing nothing, and Jared Allen was a no-show until Game 7. Then let me take you to this series, okay? Again, turnovers, inexcusable. But, like, the whole game isn't just who turns the ball over more is the end result. Game 1, by Hollinger's game score, he was the best player on the court in Game 1. Yes, did he have turnovers? He had 7 of them. Did he offset that by going 22-8-7? I kind of think so. When your team barely cracks 100, I would think 22-8-7, while over 55% from the field, should offset that. But people don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear it. And I get it. Game 2 was disastrous. There's inexcusable play by James Harden in Game 2. But was it also aided by the idea that Max Strus went 19 points in Game 1 to follow up with a 3-point performance in Game 2? Evan Mobley had 1 rebound. He's 6'11". How do you have 1 rebound in the entire game? It's insane. Is it offset by the idea that in the fourth quarter, the Cavs not only took the lead, they also then had it within 2 points with 6 minutes left. And what did the Cavs do in the fourth quarter? They went 0 for 11 from three-point land and vomited all over their shoes in the final 6 minutes of that game. So, like, James Harden's a problem, sure, but I can make an argument for 8 games he's been the best Cavs player, and he had one miserable game, and people just like to rag on James Harden.
Well, it is easy to do this time of year to do that, but I think you make some really good points. So that being said, back at it this afternoon in Cleveland, James Harden averaging around 20 points a game this postseason, 10 points in that game two loss, but 22 in game one. What do you expect from Harden? His prop right now is sitting at 19.5 points wise, but are you anticipating a bounce back performance from James Harden today back at home?
So it's so hard to tell because as many things I said nice about him for the first 8 games, we did watch game two. Game two was really bad, and he did look old in parts of game two. But I would contend that it was more about the idea that the Pistons put their best defender in Thompson on him, and they said, we're just going to basically take Harden out of the game. Harden, Tim, I'm watching this game, and I'm like, is he just a petty human? He might be. He might be on the table. But like, he took so much flack for the turnovers. So he had 3 turnovers in the first half of that game in game two. And then the second half of the game, he basically tried to make the game 4-on-4, and I'll just sit over here on the corner with Thompson and take their best defender off of the equation. Not a bad plan. We've seen him do it before, but then you just get criticized for the end of till the end of time when that happens, right? Because you're not doing your part of the share, and you're not being productive. So it is what it is. So is Harden going to do that? That game that he played in the second half of game two, where he's just basically non-existent on the court, basically the only reason why he's existing is to make the game 4-on-4 and to try to take Thompson out. If that happens, then he's going to go under on the points, and he's going to be a massive disappointment again in game three. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I feel like he's going to have a much better game three. The Cavs play better at home in the playoffs. It's how they always have been. It's this entire postseason it's been that way. The entire Donovan Mitchell postseason it's been that way. So I'm expecting a better – I mean, it's got to be better than game two, but I'm expecting a better game from James Harden.
Jonathan Peterlin, who does Afternoon Drive on 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland, joining us right now courtesy of our Progressive guest line, 3 p.m. Eastern tip time. In the land, the Cavaliers have 4.5-point favorites. So let's spin into it. You alluded to playing better at home. You know, it's funny to think back to the first round for both of these teams and where they were and what our expectations were. There was a reality where, like, are we really going to get Orlando, Toronto in the second round? We do not. We get Cleveland and Detroit. So 4.5-point favorites today. Do we expect the Cavaliers to come out and make this a 2-1 series?
I expect them to make it a 2-1 series. As far as giving up 4.5, I wouldn't bet your money on that, Tim. I like it, but I wouldn't bet your money on that. I'm shocked that the line was as high as it is, and I understand it. And I can tell what, you know, my friends in the desert over there, what you guys can see. You guys can clearly tell the difference between what this Cavs team is at home versus what they are on the road. I wish I had a great answer for why Donovan Mitchell in the playoffs in his Cavs career is 4-16 and just looks night and day different. I wish I could tell you. I can't tell you why. If they were a baseball team, Tim, we'd be like, oh, they must have some sort of like system or something set up where they can tell what pitch is coming from the outfield wall, like some home cooking. But I don't understand why it exists this way. Obviously, there's a home court advantage that exists in sports. We get that and understand it. But it shouldn't be as night and day. And obviously, in the NBA, we know role players at home play better. And maybe it's just the idea that you've just got nothing out of these role players on the road. But they're going to look better today. They're down 2-0, and I wholeheartedly believe they're going to look better today. But I still wouldn't bet your money on it.
Jonathan Peterlin joining us here, courtesy of our Progressive guest line. So you mentioned role players. I don't know if I'd call Jared Allen a role player, but his Game 7 performance is going to be talked about, I imagine, for a while. 22 points, 19 boards. That kind of, I don't want to say came out of nowhere, but it was surprising to see that lofty of numbers. Who steps up today? Is it just a Donovan game? Does he go over 27.5? Is there someone in mind that you think has a big day today for the Cavaliers?
It's a great question. I feel like it's going to be a good Evan Mobley game.
Okay.
I feel like Mobley is maddeningly inconsistent in the playoffs. And so him having a bad game in game two, I feel like we're going to have a good Mobley bounce back game, which probably means we're going to have a disappearing act from Jared Allen. The two of them don't play good games together. Very rarely do you see both of them just have really good games. So if you're going to bet one, don't bet both. And if you want to do like, here's an easy way to look at it. Jared Allen will either get you 15 rebounds or he's going to get you 3 in this game, okay? Like, it's going to be an easy side on it. So take that, and then – but I think it's going to be a good Mobley game. I would expect a good Max Strus game if there's good money on that. The 27.5 for Donovan does seem like a lot. He took a lot of shots in game two. He was wildly inefficient. But at least he was scoring for the first time in what seems like ages. So here's the part about the Harden discussion. It's masked so many things, Tim. We should right now be talking about how Mobley's been massively disappointing and Donovan has been massively disappointing in this postseason. But because Harden takes all the blame, the guys that are actually like should be getting scolded from this fan base are just getting a pass of sorts. It's incredible to me. So I would bet Mobley. I wouldn't bet Donovan over 27.5. I don't think he's going to do what he did in game two. I think the ball is going to be more spread around a little bit. And even like the Harden line, I know you mentioned, what did you say, 19.5 on that?
Yeah.
I would bet him to get over that. But right now, there's just no guarantees there. But Strus would be one to look at. And if there's a good, like Jalen Tyson number out there, don't be scared of that one either.
Well, I know
he's going to get a lot of minutes today.
I know the other Jonathan Von Tobel, had Jalen Tyson, I think, over 6.5 for game two. So that could be a guy to look at a little bit. All right, we only got about 90 seconds, actually less than that. 60 seconds. Who's the starting quarterback for the Browns week one?
Oh, man, I hate this question because it's my whole life. It's my whole life right now, Tim. I'm scared I'm going to be wrong in the answer. I still have a hard time thinking they're going to end thinking it's Deshaun Watson. Here's what I'll tell you right now. Deshaun looks great in practices so far. The 3 install practices they had, he looked phenomenal. Timmy's always looked phenomenal, though. That's the deal with Deshaun. He always looks great at practices. I'm scared Monken's going to fall for it, and I'm going to have to watch him play quarterback because it doesn't translate when he gets to the games. He's cooked, but in practices, he looks good. So the bet I have is that it's going to be Shador, but I understand why people might come around to Deshaun by the time we get there.
Man, it was are you guys okay with all the back slaps that you got after? Well, it's not like you were making the picks, but, man, everybody and their mother, including me, thought it was the best draft out there, so we will see if that's the way it plays out. JP, always appreciate it, man, and enjoy the game today.
All right, nice talking to you, man.
There he is, Jonathan Peedle, and check him out. Afternoon Drives in Cleveland. Hey, if you're looking for an edge in baseball betting, how about the VSiN Daily Diamond? Sharp daily baseball betting insight all season long. Former MLB pitcher Jensen Lewis and Super Dave Ross break it all down. Subscribe to the VSiN Daily Diamond wherever you get your podcasts. NCAA tournament expansion. Are you pro or are you anti?
You're tuned in to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
Coming up in 15 minutes, we'll talk to Zachary Cohen. We'll get his best bets for today in the NBA. Maybe look at tomorrow's games as well. Hour number 3, we will break down the 2 games on the ice. Jonathan Davis will join us, and we will talk to another Jonathan. Once again, over under 2.5 Jonathans, cash it, because we have 3 of them on the program here today. So still busy getting ready for the day ahead. And I also know that some folks out there, including our buddy Doug Kazarian, who was on with Mitch and Paul yesterday, WNBA season is underway. Started last night. We get the Dallas at Indiana. So you get Paige Beckers and AZ Fudd against Caitlin Clark in the Indiana Fever. Right now, Fever 5.5-point favorites in that one. And the champs, Las Vegas, they will be taking on Phoenix later today as well. All right. Big discussion this week. And I think we here at VSiN are a little bit different than the typical network in many ways. But we focus on the games and the point spreads and all of that. So what does that mean for the NCAA tournament that is expanding to 76 teams? I've got some thoughts on this, but Pat Forty, who has covered college sports for a long time, now at Yahoo. He was on with Mitch and Paul yesterday, and this was his breakdown and analysis of the expansion to 76 teams for the NCAA tournament.
This great brainstorm, nobody was asking for it, nobody wants it, and nobody's going to enjoy it. You're probably right. The sports bettors who want a little more action on a Tuesday and a Wednesday, as if they're not going to get enough on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday of the first week of the tournament. Well, you got a little bit more, but you know, this is clearly a solution to something that isn't broken. You're trying to fix something that is not broken.
Well said. And again, the article's fantastic. What I love in the article, this is a great point. The casual fan is going to be confused but how this bracket looks now, and then making my picks where you got so many 11 and 12 seeds involved.
Absolutely, Paulie. The bottom line to me is the draw for half the audience, or the massive audience that you have for the NCAA tournament, is how do I fill out my bracket and how's my bracket doing?
Mm-hmm.
And they've just made it a lot harder, a lot more complicated.
So as a listener to VSiN, shout out channel 158 on Sirius XM, or Masson in DC, YouTube TV, Nesson Plus in New England. I think a lot of you will understand it, but I think that is a fair point to bring up. And I was actually talking to Thomas Gable about this off the air last hour. Are we looking at, it's probably a little aggressive to say the death of the office pool, but when it was 64, it was easy. But it was 65, who cares? 68, things got a little murky, right? You had to wait for those two games to conclude on Tuesday and Wednesday night. Would that change things? Now, if you're looking at it from an office pool standpoint, I do think it gets a little trickier. But as we put on our gambling hats here at VSiN, and Matt and I have talked about this a bunch on VSiN Primetime, I don't want to say I love it, because I do think teams like Auburn, led by Nepo Baby Pearl, I don't want to see them in this field. That said, they didn't call me. My phone did not ring. I did not get a vote on this. So we have it. And I'll tell you what, come that Tuesday and Wednesday, I'm probably going to enjoy it. Now, I would love to sit back and say, you know, this is great. It opens up the door to the mid-majors. But I live in reality. And the reality is, it means more Oklahomas, it means more Auburns getting into the field. Will it help a mid-major get in? Yeah. And I do hope that what we saw from a Miami of Ohio in the play-in, not talking about the game against Tennessee, the game that they played in Dayton, where they were awesome, and they smashed a team that, let's be honest, probably didn't deserve to be in either, in SMU. I would love for this to see more of those teams in. We did see three teams from the West Coast Conference get in this year, in Gonzaga, St. Mary's, and Santa Clara. And Santa Clara, as we all recall, if Kentucky doesn't bank in a 35-footer, they win that game against Big Blue Nation. As a better, I'm cool with it. But I do understand that no one really asked for it. And when does it stop? I think that's the tricky part, right? When you initially saw some of those conferences expanding, you're like, Texas and Oklahoma in the SEC. Oh, that's kind of cool. But then we got USC, UCLA, Oregon, and Washington in the Big Ten. And that just seemed confusing. Now, we still have those teams in those conferences, and we get good games out of it. So it's one of those things where I'm okay with it, but when does it stop? And then you think about where this could lead and where we're maybe headed with college football. And this is the one where it's hard for me to get on board. I love college basketball. The fact that we get the Tuesday and Wednesday is better. If we could keep it at 76, I think I'd be all right with it. The reality is, when does it stop? Do we get to, 96 teams at some point? Hopefully not. But college football, the momentum right now of where we could be headed to 24 teams, that's going to be a tough one for me to swallow. And I look, there's been some people out there making some points about what this could look like. The FCS does it. But I will say something that's not that original, that has been brought up a bunch. You know, we sit here every Saturday in the fall. We will still sit here every Saturday in the fall, even if we do expand to 24. And I just look at the importance of every single game. I mean, you can make a strong argument. What was the most important game in college football regular season? What game had the most impact of last year's college football season? You could say Alabama beating Georgia on the road in late September. Or you could say Notre Dame losing to Miami in week one. The importance of that game was felt in early December when Miami hopped over Notre Dame to make the field of 12. Now, going back to the confusion point of the bracket, which is what Pat Forty brought up, I mean, that's what we've had in college football, right? I mean, I remember sitting there on Selection Sunday next to my 8-year-old son, and he saw Notre Dame pop up as the 11th ranked team in the country. He said, well, they can still get in. Nope. We got auto bids, right? We have the auto bid situation. It was even more confusing in year number one. But man, 24 teams in college football. I don't know if that makes it any. Does it open things up for us as bettors, right? Let's think about it from a betting standpoint, if we get there. Because guess what? The last 2 years, we saw the 7 and 8 seed play for the national title in year one. And then we saw the last at-large team in Miami make it to the championship game this past year. So the expansion to 12, which I was all on board, has proven that more teams can make a run. Now, NIL has helped in that as well. But if we go to 24, man, that'll be a tough pill to swallow. By the way, the latest episode of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast is out. Chatted with my guy Josh Nunn earlier this week. Step on a duck. We broke down the ACC. The ACC this year, man, it feels like Miami and everybody else. But what have we learned from the Canes year after year? Whether it be losing to Louisville and SMU this past year, whether it was losing to Syracuse in the regular season finale 2 years ago. They're better than everybody. Joshua Nunn, Step on a Duck on Twitter from Action Network, said he right now power rates Miami 10 points better than everyone in the conference. But that doesn't mean there aren't some tricky spots out there on that schedule. But we are getting close. We are 16 weeks away from the start of the college football season. Can't come soon enough. Game times has been starting to be announced. So start to get those juices flowing when it comes to college football. And we have a new episode out right now breaking down the ACC as well as a best bet in the group of six when we look at some of the win totals that are out there. Hey, folks, 20 leagues, one mission. Just Win Bets Baby is your premier source for daily sports betting picks. They break down the data so you can bet with confidence across the entire sports calendar. Scan the QR code or visit justwinbetsbaby.com today and start betting smarter with Just Win Bets Baby. The name says it all. Yes, indeed, it is the VSiN Weekend Morning Line. I'm Tim Murray, live from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Hour three, we will talk some pucks with Jonathan Davis. We will talk some hoops with JVT. And speaking of hoops, we got two games today, two games tomorrow. Let's talk about it with our next guest, Zachary Cohen, senior editor for VSiN.com. You can follow him on Twitter, or X, I should say, because that's his Twitter handle, at Betting on X. He joins us right now, courtesy of our Progressive guest line. We will get a little tennis in some people's lives, as we do have a match starting in Rome coming up in about 15 minutes. We'll get some thoughts on that, but let's jump right into it, Zach, and hit on this Detroit-Cleveland game. I talked to Jonathan Peterlin from Cleveland about James Harden earlier in this hour, and as you would expect, that city is none too pleased with the bearded one, and understandably so, but he made some points that, you know, yes, game two was a disaster, but overall it hasn't been that bad so far this postseason. What are you looking at today from a player prop standpoint regarding James Harden?
Yeah, it has been ugly for Harden, and I know that the jokes are going to start coming in if he really struggles today. So hopefully for his sake, he does kind of show up and, you know, play a good game. But I did play Harden to go over 3.5 first quarter points. I just thought that that number was way too low. It's still out there. I got it at minus 130. It's still out there at minus 140. You can also take it at 4.5. I just look back to the last series where it was really a similar story for Harden, where he played well at home, struggled on the road. In the home games he played against Toronto last round, he averaged 9 points per game in the first quarter. So I think he's going to come out aggressive. I think he's going to be more comfortable playing at Rocket Arena. And I do think that he hears all of the talk about him. So I would imagine he's going to come out looking for his shot a little bit after people kind of talked about not only how bad he was, but how hesitant he was in game two.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to look at it. And I would expect, even though trusting James Harden in the postseason, the track record would tell us not to do it. But I would agree kind of with you in that mindset. You know, you always hear it, the old adage, role players play better at home. So let's get to a role player for Cleveland that you have put in a player prop on him over at VSiN.com, and that's Dean Wade. So what jumps out to you about Dean Wade today with the Cavaliers?
Yeah, I went with Dean Wade over 8.5 combined points and rebounds. That was minus 110 last night. Not exactly a player that I really trust offensively, but he's out there for 20 to 25 minutes a night because he is such a good defensive player. And they do need him to defend Cade Cunningham for a pretty good chunk of his minutes. So I just don't see his role vanishing completely. And in these games, Detroit sags off of him. So he's going to get some open looks from three. He's going to get some opportunities to cut to the rim. And there's going to be some transition spots for him. So I think that as a scorer, you can count on him to have like 5 to 7. Then I do think he's going to chip in some rebounds, as he has done in the first two games in this series. He had 13 combined points and rebounds in game two. So it's not a guy that's going to go way over that number. It's going to be kind of a sweat, but I do think he's going to go over just because, like I said, I think they need him out there, and it's such a low number for a player that will be playing significant minutes in a playoff game. And also, it's another situation where role players play better at home, like you just said. I do think that he'll be a little bit more comfortable as well.
Zach Cohen, Betting on X, is where you can find him on social media. Senior editor for VSiN.com. Always has columns up over at the website and picks on the picks page. As for this game, and I know I saw a parlay that you put together, you are expecting Cleveland to get on the board here and get their first win of this series?
Yeah, I really like Cleveland today. I would lay the points if you had to. I just thought it was, you know, a good way to use OKC, and that 8.5, 9-point number tonight was just take the money lines with both of those teams and get it down to closer to plus 100. I think that the Cavaliers, we've seen them in spots where it looks like they're going to cover, in games where, you know, the sharp money was on the Cleveland side, but they were not able to do it when it comes to covering the number. So I would just rather not have to even deal with that whatsoever. But I do think this is a really good buy low spot for the Cavaliers. Like I said, you know, about James Harden playing well at home last series, it was really the same for the entire team. I mean, they won all four of their games at home. I wouldn't be surprised if they win all of their games at home in this series. The problem is you do have to win on the road at some point in order to win a playoff series as the underdog. So they're going to have to figure it out and find a way to get comfortable in Detroit. But I do think we're going to see a much better Cavaliers team in games 3 and 4. And I think that offensively, they're just due for some positive regression. I mean, this is a team that over the course of the entire season, they scored about 118 points per 100 possessions. In this series, it's been right around 107. And those numbers were even better when it was James Harden and Donovan Mitchell out there together. So I just feel like there's going to be some big offensive performances over the next couple games. Wouldn't be, you know, against looking at the team total over as well. I just feel like they're going to kind of finally start making some shots here.
Zachary Cohen, Hardwood Handicappers. Make sure you get that wherever you get your podcasts as well. Let's get to the night game, Lakers and Thunder. You mentioned that you're going to throw the Thunder on a money line parlay with the Cavaliers to make it around, I think, even money or so. But let's get to Jared McCain, because in this series, you know, we've seen Shai Gilgeous-Alexander held to just 40 total points, but the role players and the depth has been on display. He's hit four threes in each of the two games so far in this series. So over under tonight for his threes is 1.5 with plus money to the over. Do you just keep rolling with Jared McCain and expect him to hit some more threes?
Yeah, that's what I did. I didn't put a full unit on it just because I am a little bit nervous about how easy it looks to take that over after back-to-back games with four threes. But I put a half unit on plus 144. I do think he's going to get quality looks. Will he be, you know, as confident shooting in LA as he was in OKC? Maybe not, but the quality of looks that he's getting in this OKC offense is just comical. And you are seeing the Lakers trying very hard to take SGA out of these games, you know, and leaving other guys to go out and make shots. And for three quarters in both of the games, it's worked pretty well. But in the fourth quarter of both games, we've seen OKC pull apart. And I do think we're going to see McCain with some quality looks tonight and potentially some strong fourth quarter minutes if OKC does have a big lead again. But yeah, I do have that parlay. I said it was even money. It's minus 101, so pretty much. But I am looking forward to this game just to kind of see if the Lakers have another punch in them. I thought game two was about as good as it could have possibly been in terms of like efficiency and scoring from Reeves, LeBron, and Rui Hachimura, kind of like their big three in this series. So I don't really feel that confident that Los Angeles is going to win this game or really keep it close.
Yeah, it's, you know, I went through it and I'll dive into it again top of the hour. If you look back at last year, game threes were pretty lackluster for the Thunder, but this year they did take care of business in their game three against Phoenix. All right, one other player prop for you in the Thunder Lakers game. A little bit of a ladder, looks like. We got Isaiah Hartenstein over on his rebounds. So you've thrown a couple plays out there on him, laddering him up those rebounds.
Yeah, I went over 8.5 is the big play. Over 9.5, I put a half unit on. Then I put a quarter of a unit on over 11.5 at plus 344. I just think if you look at the numbers in this series, he's had 9 rebounds in both games, but the rebound chances have been a lot higher than that. There's going to be, you know, more opportunities for him to go out and get boards than we've seen these first two games. And one thing I wrote over at vsin.com is like shot making might not travel for some of these OKC players, but energy does travel. And I think that Hartenstein's a player with kind of a relentless motor and just a really good feel for impacting games on the glass. And he's going up against the center, DeAndre Ayton, that I've watched a lot. I really do question his motor. So I feel like Hartenstein is kind of begging for a breakout to a double-digit rebound game at some point. And I do think it's going to be here when the team is going to need kind of the reliable pieces to show up and play a good game.
All right, Zach, before I let you run, we're about 2 weeks away from the French Open. So right now we've got some lead-up tournaments, and you put a play in, and I was curious when these are going to start because you got, they're over in Rome and we got time and all that stuff, but this match has been pushed back a little bit, so people have time to bet it. Ben Shelton is a pretty big favorite here, and you are actually looking to fade him in this match.
Yeah, so I actually looked just now what you're talking, and there's two matches that I have not yet started, but Ben Shelton against Nicolas Basilashvili, that is a player that has been a top 20 player in the past. He's very, very talented. He's actually a lot like Shelton in that he has a lot of arm talent and just can rip the cover off the ball. So these two are going to be trading haymakers. They're going to be trying to put on a show out there. And Shelton is playing his first match outside of an altitude clay court. So these conditions are going to be a lot slower and a lot less server friendly for him. So I do think that Basilashvili is a player that can give him some trouble in, you know, kind of new surroundings. And he did have to go through qualifying himself. So he's played a few matches here. I do think that there's a really good chance that Basilashvili wins a set. And I sprinkled him to win the match just because I do think that Shelton has been just a little bit okay lately. I don't think he's played his best tennis ever since winning a tournament a couple of weeks ago. So don't really love these conditions for him. The other match I mentioned, I also like Ignacio Bus to beat Francis Tiafo, who has not played a single match on European clay this season and hasn't played a clay court match dating back to like a month ago when he played in America on clay, which is a very, very different surface.
You know, We were going to be friends until you faded my DMV brother, Francis Tiafo, and I'm going to have to cut you off here. Zach, always appreciate it, brother. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
There he is, Zachary Cohen. Follow him on social media, at Betting on X. Lakers, he mentioned it. Doesn't think it might will be that close. We'll dive into what OKC did in these game threes a year ago.